Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life. It is a beautiful day in Tampa Bay. It's a two for Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. The only 4-16, 2-0-19 in the history of humanity. Let us continue to choose on purpose, with a purpose, to give a great Tuesday and a great every day. Glenn Klein here in the Hitting Home Media Group studios in Tampa Bay, Florida. The big O, Owen Pratt, has got the day off. Must be nice to have so much time off. Gets to go surfing, plays music, but he'll be back soon, the big O. Glad to have you along on this rendition of Organized Fun with a Purpose. It's April 16th. It is my fourth son, Isaac Joel Olson Klein's 25th birthday. Scobo, out there in beautiful San Diego, California. Happy birthday, Isaac. Izzy just had a pretty bad car accident the other day. He was traveling home after an evening out, and a guy cut him off. And I was sleeping. Of course, I'm on the East Coast of the United States. Oh! America, and is he on the left coast, had no idea. Do you ever notice, beautiful humans, that we are not affected by what happens? We are emotionally and psychologically affected by knowing what happens. This is one of the real important reasons to guard what you let in your eyes, into your ears, and in your psyche. He's all right. But I had no idea that he had been in a car accident. And I talked to Dawn the next morning. She called me. And as soon as she said hello, I knew there was something wrong. Dawn and I have known each other since 1981. I know her really well. She is the mother of our six children. She is the grandmother of the seaman, Connor Tezzy Klein, Judah Klein, our third son's son. We know each other really well, even though we're not married anymore. We still partner. We're business partners. We're parenting partners. We just ought not live together anymore, so we don't. But I knew there was something wrong. And she said Isaac had a pretty bad car accident. He's okay, she told me right away. But it was a car accident. Human beings are affected by what they know, not what is happening out there. We have a 24/7 news cycle that is in front of our eyes all day long. Depending on how much you listen to the radio or watch television or are on your device. And situations that used to take months to reach the news in this country, things like tsunamis in Asia or earthquakes or catastrophes, even wars, people did not know about. It did not emotionally affect them. Nowadays, there is an earthquake in India or somewhere, and it's like it happened down the block. It's very emotionally taxing. And my daughter Hannah and her husband Angel live in Atlanta, Georgia. And they're really sharp young people. They've been together since they were 16. Been married for 6 years, and they got it going on. Hannah is an incredibly accomplished actor, Angel, a singer, songwriter, musician, tremendous, fun people. And both he and Hannah were particularly, I think a lot of people on both sides of the political divide, were particularly affected by the 2016 presidential election. And I talked to Angel about it quickly because he was getting really angry with the things that were happening and being said. He is a dark-skinned Puerto Rican young man, handsome as hell. Hannah is a blonde, blue-eyed, pale. She loves her white skin. And Angel loves his. Those kids are going to have some beautiful babies eventually. Right now they're focusing in on their career. So I talked to Angel about it and focused in on the positive. And then right after the election, you'll recall the Me Too movement started, not least of which because who ended up becoming president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, and all the things that were surrounding his election. So the Me Too movement starts, and I asked Hannah about, I don't know, a week or two after the thing really got going, what she thought about what had happened to Harvey Weinstein. And because that's her industry. So I said, what do you think about Harvey Weinstein? And she said, what do you mean, Pop? And I said, you know. She said, I have no idea. I said, have you not watched the news for like the last 10 days? She had no idea what had happened, what Harvey Weinstein had done, apparently, allegedly. She said, Pop, after the 2016 election, I turned off the news. She has said, I have no idea what's happening in the world. And I'm so much happier. I go about my life. I go to rehearsals. She's a nanny as well to bring in extra money. I have no idea what's happening. And she goes, I'm just fine. Well, I'm not necessarily recommending just turning off the news. I like to stay informed. I've been in my life a political junkie. I love anything that has to do with the human drama, I enjoy. I do not enjoy reading fiction books or watching movies, film, television even, that's not plausible. I think the human condition is much more interesting than anything we could make up. I mean, you couldn't make up what has happened and is happening in this country, for example. It's way more fascinating. That's why I love sports, because real strategy, real drama, the ups and the downs, the wins and the losses, in reality, especially in athletics, which really doesn't mean anything. It's a great way to learn some valuable life's lessons as a life coach that I am. So I don't necessarily recommend turning off the news. I follow the news. I stay informed. But if you turn on CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, it's basically the same shit over and over and over again. And if you turn on the news, if something new is happening, you're going to hear about it within 20 seconds. You can follow along, and then they repeat that crap over and over. If that's what you're feeding into your soul, beautiful humans, you're not going to be happy. I mean, you hear about the emotional effects that Trump's election had on certain well-known celebrities, depression, alcoholism. It's important who's president of this country. It's not that important to your life, though. It's not important to get all screwed up about it. Really. I start my day with meditation, classical music, a delicious cup of coffee. I get into my day before my day gets into me. If the first thing you do is turn on the news first thing in the morning, you are setting the tone for a really fucked up day. Just stop it. Admit and quit. It's very easy not to turn on the news. Now, I know the news can be addicting, like anything else. Do you know that they have self-help group now for people that are addicted to their devices? Anything that could be positive or even is positive, like we know scientifically that a glass of wine in an evening or a glass of beer, like I have in front of me here in the Hitting Home Media Group studios, in my University of Wisconsin Badger beer stein. A beer, a glass of wine is good for you. Slows the heart rate down, lowers the blood pressure. But once you get into 6, 7, 8 beers a day, not so good. Yes, obviously it's good to be able to stay in touch with your family and to check into Facebook or Instagram. But people freak out when they lose their phones. Turn your phone off once in a while. Go out and let the sun hit you in the face. Unless you're living in Chicago or Wisconsin, this time of year, very difficult. The information that you put into your brain will absolutely impact your emotions. Be a good gatekeeper for your eyes and your ears, what you're hearing, what you're seeing. This is Glenn Klein Online for a Two for Tuesday. And my partner, Theodore Owen Pratt, has got the day off, but subbing in, I'm very happy to please welcome online. He is a certified life coach, a recreational therapist. He is in a place that does show the sun from time to time, actually quite frequently. Please welcome online Mr. Elliot Andre. Elliot!
Hey, hey, what's up?
How are you?
I am so good. I appreciate the opportunity to have you interview me and communicate about what the world is all about, what we need, what we have, and what we're dealing with. So thank you for the wonderful introduction, and I'm excited to talk and see what happens.
You never know here online what's going to happen. I mean, we've got some of the things we've gotten into, both on this program and our other show, Sex in the Pews. I told Elliot that we do another podcast called Sex in the Pews, and he said, Sex in the Pubes? No, not Sex in Pubes, although that becomes... Do you ever see the show Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David? You ever watch that show?
Four. Good times.
Yeah, you see the episode when he gets a pubic hair caught in his throat?
Yes. It's good. One of the best. One of the best.
It's one of the great things about your generation, Elliot, is that pretty much isn't an issue anymore.
No.
When I was growing up, it was an issue.
Totally.
We actually had a couple of jokes and terms for it, you know.
Really?
Sure. If you fingered a young woman and you got a thing called stinky pinky. I mean, and that's about you. It was hard to get that stank off your fingers. And of course, it was like a, you know, kind of a good thing when you were growing up. And then
rite of passage.
Yeah. Then the old joke was there's only two things that smell like fish, and one of them's fish. That's not true anymore.
That's true.
See, if there's any doubt that things have progressed in our society, ladies and gentlemen, there it is, right there. A lack of pubic hair. It was an evolutionary thing that happened to keep people warm, and now we have clothes. We don't need that. So just clean it up. Actually, in my life coaching and relationship coaching, you would be amazed in the struggle for power control within couples, how that becomes an issue.
Sure.
There are women and guys for that matter that will not trim the garden as a point of conflict with their significant other.
Wow.
And I think to myself, if they can't even agree on that,
right?
There's some seriously deep-rooted issues there that all the counseling and coaching and therapy in the world may not be able to cure.
Totally.
Elliot Andre is getting a text as we speak, because we can hear it buzz, but that's okay. And he's also the co-founder.
Sorry.
That's all right. He's also the co-founder of Connected Roots with his beautiful wife, Lauren, in Colorado. Where in Colorado are you?
We're in a place called Broomfield. It's just south of Boulder by the University of CU Boulder. So we're about 20 minutes away.
Of course, in the
offices in Boulder, yeah.
In the freedom-loving state of Colorado, where they have the first state in the union to legalize marijuana. And
that is right.
Is that just completely been now just enmeshed in Colorado society?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of the culture. And I think now that it has been legalized, I think a lot less people or a lot less clients that we see or that I see aren't abusing it nearly as much as they would have if it was illegal. I think it brings a little. Sorry.
Every time you get a text and it buzzes and you say sorry, that'll take like half of our time. So don't worry about it.
Okay, I won't do that.
We get it.
Okay. But yeah, no, it's been a space where a lot of people are finding now that the use of recreational marijuana has been kind of a blessing in disguise. I think for a lot of people who never used it or never thought or knew the benefits of it. But I think for what I've seen, what I know, and a lot of the people, like I said, that I've been working with over the past 6-7 months, are not really in a space where it's like a fun party drug or thing to do anymore. It's really just an essence of, you know, letting go of some anxiety, seeing the health benefits, you know, relieving some pain. It's not nearly as wild as you think it would be. And I think a lot of what the green industry is doing for Colorado is great. They're reinvesting in schools, parks, roads, you name it. I mean, it's unbelievable how much money is coming in and how much money is being put to good use.
A lot of the critics of marijuana says that obviously the potency of the THC has gone up tremendously. And I can attest, having smoked marijuana for the first time in my life in 1972, while you were still a just glint in your father's eye.
Exactly.
It's gone up tremendously. I like to call myself the one hit wonder. I need one and I'm done. And then, of course,
a lot of people are that way too.
And it's beautiful. And some children obviously get a hold of edibles or whatnot, and they have ended up in the emergency room. Parents, you still got a parent. I mean, it's marijuana is no different than any other substance or drug that you would have in your house. You don't let your kids get to your pills, hopefully, even though kids want to, or alcohol, or certainly young kids get into the cleaning supplies and all that stuff. Parent your children. Let them know.
Right.
And we didn't have legal marijuana in Florida, still don't. It's medicinal here, which I can't even believe. I've been here for 25 years. I cannot even believe that we have medicinal marijuana here in the Bible Belt. But we do.
Right.
But when my kids were growing up, I decided and Dawn decided that we were going to be very open with them. And our house became the safe house. And so that's where the kids could come and hang out in the backyard, and no lying, no cheating, no sneaking around. We told them that if they drank, that we obviously didn't want them to drive. And if they found themselves in a situation where there was nobody who had not been drinking, just call us, no questions asked. We'd give them props for using wisdom. Mm-hmm. And we have 6 children, and all their friends used to hang out. And I'm happy to report that we did get by. And obviously there's a lot of luck involved too, of course, without any major accidents. I mean, the accident that Isaac was in last week was one of the more major accidents we've been in. And he's okay. Mm-hmm. No unplanned pregnancies. And so parents, be more involved in your kid's life. I know Hannah is 28, and by all counts, she and Angel have a wonderful love life. And she and her friends will talk about sex every so often. And Hannah's very knowledgeable, very open about it. And they'll say, "Hannah, where did you learn this?" And she'll say, "From my mom and dad." Mm-hmm. And think about this. This is the millennial generation, or Generation Z. And even they are freaked out that our daughter would have talked to us about sex. This is the most important thing that you will ever do is to be a parent. And parents are abrogating to this day their responsibility to their children. Get involved. Get yourself some books and some information. There's podcasts. There's life coaches. Therapists to talk to. More communication is the best. You want to err on too much communication, on too much information, not too little, because then you'll end up, you know, potentially with a teen pregnancy or some accidents. I used to tell the kids, Elliot, the boys would be like 17, 16, 15, Joe, Jacob, Judah, the J team, and all their friends would be over. They'd be getting ready to go out in the evening, and I would stop them in the foyer of our home, and I would say, "Fellas," and they knew it by rote. They would repeat. They would go, "Two things, wear your seatbelt, and don't be a fool, wrap your tool." That was my advice to my teenage son. Because if you do those two things, if you wear your seatbelt and you wrap your tool, you're going to avoid a lot of problems potentially.
That is true.
Are you taking notes, young man?
Notes have already been taken. they're being scribbled.
Jacob is a marijuana grower in Oceanside, California. That's what he does for a living.
Nice.
Him and his partner, John, they have John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt Farms. Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Wow.
Yeah. They're killing it out there.
Fabulous.
Yeah, they're doing great.
I would imagine they would.
So why'd you guys call yourself Connected Roots?
You know, that's a great question.
That's why I get the big bucks out of it.
You know, I think it all started. We were out. We did a survival vacation retreat in Indiana, of all places. And it was a place to disconnect, find space for a lot of deep thinking, and learn primitive survival skills. And when we were there, we never felt more connected, right? More grounded or more confident in our abilities to be ourselves. And we were sitting down, you know, a couple of weeks after we went on this trip and felt like this was the moment. You know, we were like, let's start a business that's therapeutic, but also wilderness-based or, you know, outdoor activity-based. And I was like, I don't know what that looks like, but, you know, I'm just going to spitball some names out there so we can have them, you know, for the future. So we're sitting having a bunch of beers, just shooting the shit. And I was like, how about like thinking about where we're grounded, where our roots are, where trees come from, where our families are. And the idea just came to me. It was like connection, connected roots. And we just threw it out there, and it stuck. And it took 3 years really to get the courage and cultivation of ideas and programming and business planning to get started. And moving to Colorado was the way to do that if we're really going to pursue this idea of outdoor or experiential activity-based therapy long-term. Because you can't really get that in the concrete jungle of Chicago. So we've been hitting the ground running since June and have had tremendous excitement and clients come to us and really appreciate what we're doing. So that's Connected Roots and the beginnings and foundings of it in a nutshell.
Did you ever listen to the band The Roots?
Yeah, I love The Roots.
You got
Quest Love action going on.
You guys could do some promotional videos with some Roots music in the background.
That'd be too good, right?
Connected Roots. Well, you know, you can go a little north of Chicago to get into some nice wooded areas, if you know what I'm saying.
I do.
But full disclosure,
like the mountain.
Elliot's dad, Brian, and I went to camp together, and then Elliot and his brothers, Jared and Matt, came to Camp Menominee in the beautiful North Woods of Wisconsin. How much did your experience in the North Woods play in your desire to do more outdoor therapy versus just sitting on a couch or a chair looking at somebody?
Yeah, it's fun to reflect about time at camp now versus time at camp then. But I'd say, you know, camp in itself was a form of therapy for me as a child. I might not have figured it out then, but in reflection now, I think camp was just a space to really understand the power of activity, nature, and connection with people that you might not really know or connect with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, there's people from camp that you knew, obviously, but then there was people that worked there, for instance, that were international. You got to learn a new culture. You got to learn people's, you know, grievances with what they're doing, America, their country. It was just a really nice open space to really explore growing up as a male in society. I think now that I think about it, a lot of my long-term issues with masculinity and femininity might have stemmed at camp, but I'm glad that I went to realize that was something that I struggled with. And I actually had the opportunity of going back and working at another camp in the North Woods. I wouldn't consider it the North Woods, but one called Camp Shy. And I got to work with a neurodiverse group of young adults and children and just realized how much I loved being at camp. I think, honestly, I had more fun than most of the campers while being up there and just living my truth, living authentically, and just being outdoors and, you know, running group therapy and swimming and just being myself. So I think camp definitely plays a huge role in the essence of why we decided to be out here, as well as just, you know, people in general, I think, should have the opportunity, if they can, to go see that and be a part of it, because it's such a special place.
That's how summer camps came to be. Remember, beautiful humans, that the United States was an agrarian society. people were outside all the time when it first started. They were farmers. And then once the industrial age kicked in and the city started springing up, cities like Chicago, then people were in concrete jungles. And so visionaries like Nate and Edna Wasserman, who founded Menominee in 1928, said, we have an opportunity to get kids out of the stress and of the city and back into nature. And what a genius stroke it was for these. They were pioneers. And when Dawn and I owned Menominee, we were honored to nominate Nate and Edna Wasserman. It's kind of like the American Camping Association Hall of Fame. They are pioneers of the American camping movement now, forever enshrined, and they should be. Camp does so many things and has really evolved into many different avenues and different ways. There's so many guys that went to Menominee that are in the sports world, that are in the recreation world. There was one camper of ours who went to his father's business in the Chicago area, and he was not happy. And then he moved out to, I want to say, Idaho or Montana or Wyoming, somewhere out west, and he became an X Games, Winter X Games photographer. And he told me that he conducts every single day of his life as though he's at camp, and he loves it.
Amazing.
And this kind of gets back to what we were talking about in the opening monologue, which was you're taking your work into your brain every day. It's really a good idea if you do something that you're passionate about and that you love and that is an outgrowth of what is resident in your soul. Now, obviously, we need businessmen, we need construction workers, but if you're not one of those type of people who need to work with people or make a significant positive difference emotionally, psychologically in somebody's life, follow your heart, you guys. But you mentioned, Elliot, that you were having issues with masculinity and femininity that may have stemmed from camp. How did that play out when you were a boy, and what were those issues, and how are they manifested as you've grown up?
I think, you know, society puts a big stamp on what men should be and what their role should be in this world and in society. And I think at camp, I was definitely one that had a sense of toxic masculinity within myself, kind of subconsciously, but consciously knowing that. And I think a lot of it stemmed from my issues with self-conscious. You know, I was definitely a bully, and you know, my way and thrive, you know, my way of thriving at camp was always putting people down and really being an ass, being a fucking ass. That was my role at camp. You know, I terrorized kids. I made fun of them regularly. So for me, and I saw the benefits of it. You know, I saw that I was getting friends and feeling, you know, popular and confident, but realistically deep down, you know, I never felt good about myself. So I think, you know, going through camp and being kind of in that space for so long kind of threw me for the ringer, and definitely kind of changed my attitude about, you know, how to live my life. I think it wasn't until I stopped going to camp, seeing a therapist and reflecting about my own issues that it, you know, really, you know, deep down came up that, you know, I felt a side of myself that was more feminine that I didn't really want to express because I didn't feel like I had space to. You know, I was always on the sports teams and, you know, the captain of this, the star athlete of that. And, you know, I never felt as if I could be comfortable enough to, you know, show another side of myself because I felt like I always had to show up. And it wasn't until I got out of that phase and realm of like not wanting to do sports or be in like the camp kind of setting that, you know, I found kind of my passion, and it was volunteering with young people who also have felt the same things that I did growing up. And it kind of reframed my mindset of like what being a positive role model could really do for somebody. I mean, it took a lot of time and energy, but, and therapy, of course, but I think I got to the point where I kind of had a mind altering moment where I just knew realistically that if I kept on living this false truth, I wasn't going to be happy.
That's really powerful, bro.
Yeah.
I was a bully as well at camp.
Sure.
And it wasn't until that I bought the camp and became a director that I really owned that. And sure. The manifestation of being a bully is an absolute result of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two boys that were major targets of myself and the other bullies that were in our peer group at camp. And I used to use them as examples of what I did as a kid and what counselors should be looking for guys that are being scapegoated and how to avoid it. And I felt awful about it in retrospect. And both because I owned the camp, one of the kids we bullied so badly when he was 10 years old that he never came back to camp until he was 15. And then we bullied him all over again. Mm-hmm. And many years later, of course, I own the camp and the phone rings in the camp office. And it's this guy on the telephone. Here I am, the owner of Camp Menominee. Here's a guy that I was bullying at 10 years old and at 15 years old. And he's calling me. And he wants to bring his family to the family camp, to post camp. And I said, of course. And I got to not only apologize to him in person at camp, and he was such a mensch about it. He was like, dude, we were boys. It's fine. I'm fine. But then he sent his son to camp, and his son was exactly as his dad, the biggest, whiniest pain in the ass ever. I mean, a lot of scapegoats, I would say most scapegoats, are actually asking for what they get, because that manifests their insecurity. They need the attention. Right. The totally. Challenge when you're with young people, for those that are in supervisory positions, this is what I used to say at camp, and this is what I think. 90% of what scapegoats get, they really do want. It's like S&M. I mean, it's just there's that dynamic. They want it. They need it. They need the attention. They need the focus. It answers to their lack of feeling good about themselves, so they get that attention. The key is the other 10%. The other 10%, if it's not supervised, becomes inhuman, and that's where there can be some real problems. And then the other guy never called me to come to – his son came, and he was just – I mean, he had a massive scapegoat target on his back the size of New Jersey. And mm-hmm. I made sure that kid had a good time at camp. And he ended up finding his passion in sailing. So much so that he came to camp for 3 years and he mastered the sailing program and he won the regattas at camp. And then he went to sailing camp. I did such a good job, I lost a client over it. And then the other major scapegoat that I was brutal to, God, he was such a sweet, just, you know, whiny, just nice boy. And he was such a nerd, you know? And but I literally made it a life passion and a goal to track him down. And once Facebook kicked in, I was able to find him and profusely apologize. And again, completely understanding, both these guys have done well in their lives. And that's all you can do. When you fuck up, own your shit and apologize and try to not repeat the same problems over and over again. The problem with we human beings, we repeat the same patterns over and over and over again, and we don't go to therapy. We don't get everybody's got a life coach in their lives, Elliot. They're just not called life coaches. Right. Everybody's got somebody they go to. They're just not qualified. They're not thoughtful. They're working out their own insecurities through giving bad advice. Get yourself somebody that's qualified and that's bona fide and that has a proven track record. By the way, coaches are not players. You ever notice that?
That's right.
The best coaches typically were not good players. You almost never find a great coach that was a great player. Almost never. Because the great players, the Michael Jordans of the world, if you will, the Tiger Woods, the Wayne Gretzky's, whomever. It came naturally to them. They worked hard, but they didn't. The guys that really become great coaches really had to think about and focus and observe and gut it out. I mean, people often ask me, you know, well, why don't you have more money or why don't you have whatever the fuck? And I just say, listen, I you know, there's a great scene in Good Will Hunting with Robin Williams and Matt Damon. Do you remember that scene?
Of course.
Where,
who doesn't remember that scene? It's ingrained in my mind.
Where Matt Damon challenges Robin Williams. He says, listen, I didn't say I just teach this shit. I didn't say I can do it.
Right.
So what side of your femininity or your more feminine side came out, and how did that manifest?
I think it had to do a lot with just expressing emotions and feeling okay with doing that. And also, I think, you know, just being my more confident self happens to do with a lot of more things that we typically say are more feminine, you know, like self-care and an understanding of empathy and things along the lines of that, where, you know, a typical general male, you know, based in society might not really understand, you know. I've had so many friends and people that I've worked with who, you know, don't understand this essence of like the feminine and the masculine mind. And I think just, you know, valuing that and showing them that it's okay to express that is totally fine. I mean, I think the biggest thing that people notice is my essence of just maybe dressing the way that I like to dress. I like to be a little bit more flamboyant and fun. I think a lot of it has to do with my sexuality, with feeling comfortable and, you know, approaching men, giving them hugs, you know, touch and things like that, you know, where a lot of people don't really get down with that, you know, traditionally speaking. Just the essence of expressing love and appreciation, crying, being vulnerable. I think all those senses of, you know, what people would consider feminine kind of traits, I try to express and show more often than I do this hyper-toxic masculine man.
You know,
with a put-out chest and everything.
There's nothing wrong with putting out your chest, fellas, okay?
No, there isn't.
It's when it gets out of balance, where you can't be emotional, where you can't tell another man you love them, where you're freaked out because you had a gay fantasy, even though you're definitely oriented towards heterosexuality. This is why we got problems with the persecution of the LGBTQ community to this day. I mean, today, or I should say last week, the United States military is kicking out 13,000 transgender people. That is an outrage. They're serving our country. The religious right has gotten in there because I guarantee you, we know this, that the people that struggle in their mind with their religion and with their so-called morality, in their mind with sexual thoughts or proclivities, are the ones that are driving this issue. And the issue to try to, for example, the whole issue of should gay and lesbian people be able to get married. It's just fine, you guys. It's just fine. But the problem is, or the challenge, is that men, primarily throughout human history, have lorded over their strength in such a heinous way that now we have terms like toxic masculinity. Masculinity in and of itself is a good thing. We need the masculine. We need the feminine. I don't want to be part of disparaging masculinity. You can't have life without the masculine. You can't have life without the feminine. You need both. So I would rather call it for what it is, Elliot, which is misogyny a lot of times. It's insecurity. It's bullying. Mm-hmm. I don't want a couple. It's like, you know, I'm a huge supporter of Israel, and now they're calling Zionists racist Zionists. No, right. Either if somebody's racist, they're racist. It's got nothing to do with the fact that they think the Jewish people ought to have a homeland to themselves.
Right.
They may be wrong on an issue, or on a lot of issues, But just because they think, for example, that Jewish people should have a place where they are the majority in the population, the one place on the planet, and historically that we know that this is a pretty important issue, especially to Jewish people, that right. they're racist, they're misogynist, they're jerks, they're bullies, they're haters, whatever. But I hate lopping toxicity with masculinity, because if there's anything that's been happening in our society is the attempt to emasculate men and to put down men for being men. It's one of the things we focus on Sex in the Pews all the time, is how to be a true man.
Right.
One of my mentors in all this was a woman named Sherry Ford, who was a madam in Las Vegas. And I was doing a show after we sold camp here in the Tampa Bay area on the air, that was a daily talk show, and Sherry was writing a book, and she reached out to me, and so then we started a show together, and she was smart, and she very observant person, and she would always ask the question. In fact, it's the first line of my book. She's passed away since, and I've dedicated my book to her. She would always ask the question: where are the men? Where are the true men?
Sure.
The men that will not only provide a loving, supportive, warm, safe home for their significant others, their wives, their children, but also, frankly, will stand up to the women in their lives when the women are trying to nag them, or what a lot of relationship coaches call now shit testing. Women will do this. They need to do this. It's a way they test to see if you are worthy of mating with them. It's a very natural thing. But most guys today, because of how society has evolved and women got equal rights, thank God, they don't know what to do, because we got tens of thousands of years of recorded human history where women were the property of men. If a man didn't like what his woman do, he could just backhand her, be done with it. You can't do that anymore. But there's a way to effectively stand up to your women, gentlemen, that is loving and supportive, but you are not a pushover.
Right.
And the masculine, because of the Me Too movement, which is so needed in our society, guys don't know what the hell to do anymore. And that's one of the things that I do. That's my specialty. If you go to CoachGlennKline.com, you'll read all about it. We have to find what Madam Sherry was asking for. We have to find the men. Most guys are not natural alpha males. They're called alpha males, but they're not. They are wussies. They are insecure. They're a-holes. And when the spam hits the fan, that's when the stalking starts and the abuse, because women primarily are attracted to confidence. Men and women are equal. There's no doubt about it. If you put a gun to my head and say, who's the superior species, I would say women all day long. But we're certainly at least equal. Mm-hmm. But there's a way to stand up to them. But men and women are equal, but we're not the same.
That's true.
The men provide the seed. The women provide the house for the seed. That will never change. And even if a couple doesn't want to have children, there's still a biological, genetic, emotional trait that is passed down from generation to generation. And no matter how masculine, I mean, Dawn has, my ex has got a particular high level of testosterone for a woman, but she is a woman. She is feminine. And I have a more of a feminine side than a lot of guys do. We actually were a very good match. We were an incredible team. We produced six amazing children. But she's still a woman, and I'm still a man. And there's a way to be an actual alpha male, not to domineer over a woman or a society, or to be a bully. A true man, Elliot, is not a bully. A true man is empathetic and sympathetic, but also strong and virile. Boom.
Totally.
How does that feel to you, certified life coach?
Feels great, man. Feels great. I'm working with a client right now who actually struggles a lot with masculinity. and, you know, not ever feeling like he's good enough or can, you know, stand up to anything. And it's more so than anything trying to find, we're working on trying to find that space and what that looks like and what he can change in his life to feel that confidence and, you know, comfortable masculinity within himself. So I think I might bring that into next session and say, are you, you know, how can we find your true man? You know, I like that a lot. I think that's powerful and empowering and strong.
It's in there, for every human being there. Yeah. We all, in my humble podcast host, life coach opinion, we all have the same identity inside. We just got to find it. It manifests itself obviously very differently in people's lives, but inside, this is what I think, and I've spent my entire life studying this and thinking about it. I have been a theologian for almost my entire adult life. I've thought about these things, I've studied them, I've traveled, and I've come to the conclusion that everybody, and I mean everybody, is perfect and righteous on the inside. They just don't know it. And there are ways to elicit and to solicit that information, to get it from your heart, if you will, from your spirit. There's many ways to articulate it into where we live, which is between our ears. Our brains are the problem. And so what I do with my clients, I take them through a process so that on the regular, however often they need it, they can give themselves a brain bath and come back to their true identity. It's got nothing to do with what you do. It's got nothing to do with how much money you make, how successful you are, how successful your relationships are, what the state of your children are, your bank account, the kind of vehicle you drive, nothing like your physical health. It has to do who you be. Fortunately, thankfully, we are not called human doings. We are called human beings. And the key to this beautiful, this is why I call everybody beautiful humans. Everybody's a beautiful human to me. It's just a question of how much it manifests in their life. And so the question is, how do you get this reality because no two people manifest this the same way. We all have different fingerprints. Think about that for a second. No two human beings that have ever walked the face of the earth have the same fingerprint. Incredible. So in the same way, the imprint that you can leave in the earth is not going to be the exact same as anybody else. So how do you tap in to what everybody shares, that we are truly one people, that we are truly one family, human family? How do you be and allow that to manifest in your life? And that's frankly, the heartbeat of my life, Elliot Andre.
It sounds like a great heartbeat, you know? That's for sure. I think I can definitely get down with that. You know, I mean, I think people who are in their head have the hardest time realizing what their true potential is because they're always doubting and self-judging. I've noticed that generally with so many people that I've worked with, especially men, in trying to find their identity. I think a lot of it's almost in a sense of like an identity crisis. Who am I? Where am I? How do I get there? And I always have preached, you know, if you can connect your mind with your heart, then we can start the real work. Because your heart really is the driving force of what you are, what your imprint will say is. Your brain is just the messenger of it.
That's good stuff, man.
I definitely attest to what you're saying in essence of what that true feeling is, because it's powerful once you get there.
So this client that you're working with that doesn't feel manly or masculine, how is that manifesting in his life? Is that an issue with a significant other or professionally, or what is it?
I mean, everywhere, any bit. He has definitely issues with attachment, and finds that, you know, if I don't have an attached relationship with somebody, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. He just recently got a job, you know, thank God. But before then, he was out of work for 6 to 8 months, you know, had no drive to look or find anything. His confidence was extremely low. He wasn't taking care of his everyday life skills, not showering, not shaving, just really in a rut of filth and dirt and just could not get that off of him. So I think that, you know, as of recent, as we've just started to discover, you know, things like a nice wardrobe and shaving and putting on deodorant in the morning can make you feel good about yourself. He's starting to believe that his heart and his passions have a little bit more control over his brain and his thoughts of what I need to be, what I should be, or how I can measure up to the next person in front of me. So, I mean, the guy has extreme talent in what he does, and applying himself to do that is where the hardest part's been. And so, you know, really trucking into, you know, getting in depth with the traumas that he may have faced and really kind of not allowing them to control his actions has been one thing we've been working on. And also just being him and being okay with that, not giving a fuck what everybody else thinks about how he presents himself, especially in relationships and being social and the essence of masculinity, like why he doesn't feel as if he can be masculine and be okay. And I think society, like we've been saying in the Me Too movement, things like that, where guys don't know what the fuck to do.
Right.
They're confused. They're scared. You know, yep. I mean, he's scared to be in an intimate relationship and do something that can get him, you know, in a position of the law. So, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with his heart and his head connecting and trying to find his authentic being without really, you know, dramatizing what all the other negatives are out there.
That's awesome, dude. You know, I had suffered from clinical depression my whole life. Didn't know it until well after we sold the summer camp, and then it really hit hard in those years after. And one of my coaches called me, and this guy had a lot of experience with mental illness. He had tried committing suicide 3 different times. He had been in mental institutions 6 different times, and he had really primarily overcome what for him were massive anxiety disorders and panic attacks. That was his disabling issue. And he also was trying, he was gay, and he was trying not to be gay for much of his early adult life. And we were very good friends. And he knows me and very well. And he knows the kind of outgoing, vibrant personality that I can have. And bro, I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't talk. Could you imagine me not talking, not being able to talk?
No,
that's how sick I was. And I mean, I was suicidal. And if you ever talk to somebody, they don't understand suicide. It's because they've never battled that. When I'm not sick, I never think about suicide. That's a symptom that I know that I got to focus in. If I have a thought of suicide, I know my brain is about to catch a cold, if you will, about to catch a brain flu. I need some brain cleansing stuff going on. But I wasn't there yet. This is many years ago, and it's about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so he called me, and I could barely talk. And he knew from whence I came because he had been there in his life. And if you guys criticize people who are that kind of depressed or who do commit suicide, you're making a big mistake, in my opinion, because you can't relate to the depth of darkness, the despair. A lot of people kill themselves. They think that they're doing everybody a favor. They think that they're doing the loving thing by taking themselves out. That's how twisted and ill-functioning their brain is. The serotonin levels, the dopamine, all that stuff. And I went on the medicine, and all the side effects that you see in the commercials, nausea, seizures, fainting, increased thoughts of suicide, I had them all. Constipation, every single one of them.
And the list goes on.
So I was on the medication at the time. And he said to me, Glenn, he said, I'm going to tell you something. I've been there. I've been there. He said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, don't do anything you can't do. Do not do anything you don't want to do. But know this, things are going to change.
Yeah.
And he said, it might get better and it might get worse, but it's not going to remain the same. And I heard that. And when you hear truth, beautiful humans, I'm talking about truth that is universally true. Like, we all know the only constant is change. That's true for everybody. Like, 10 seconds ago when Ellie and I were talking, we're 10 seconds ahead. Things have changed. Now we're talking about this. We were talking about pubic hair earlier. We're not talking about pubic hair anymore. Things we all know that change is the number one constant. And when you hear truth, if you allow it to penetrate your soul, it will cause forward movement without you having to do anything. It will propel you forward. Now, most people would say, oh, everything's going to work out just fine. Things are going to work out. That's bullshit. Sometimes things work out for the best. Sometimes things work out for the worst. That's the truth. Sometimes the truth hurts. But it doesn't mean it's not the truth. And when he said that, Elliot, I knew that that was true. That it was, and it might get worse, and it might get better, but it ain't going to stay the same. And for me, moving forward was just not killing myself then. Moving forward for me was just getting up and going to the bathroom, or like your client, taking a shower. That was moving forward. My brother, Jimmy, I was life coaching at this time. And he said, bro, you're a life coach. Get your ass out of bed and go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, when I heard that, his admonition to me to go and take a walk, he might as well have said to me, Glenn, you know that rocket ship you built in the backyard? Get in that rocket ship and take a trip to the moon. That's how nonsensical him telling me to get out of bed and go for a walk was. But when my coach and my friend Mike said, don't do anything you can't do. Don't do anything you don't want to do. In other words, you have the freedom to be sick. What do we tell people with the flu? Get better. Go to bed.
Right.
Drink some fluids. Rest. But not that's just with nasal sinus problems or chest problems or whatever the hell. But with people with brain problems, oh, come on, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Fuck that shit.
Yeah, agreed. Fuck that shit.
When he told me, don't do anything you can't do, he was giving me freedom to be sick.
Oh, validating how you were feeling.
Exactly. Don't do anything you can't do. Don't do anything you don't want to do. But know this. Things are going to change. It might get better, and it might get worse, but it's not going to be the same. That was the truth, and that propelled me. Well, I'm, obviously not sick right now. And then there's other information, you guys, about how to balance your serotonin, how to balance your dopamine. I mean, there's so many good things you can do once you're over the hump of a major depression or a major mental illness. There are always answers. I had a buddy of mine recently, Elliot. I mean, just in the last couple of months, 55 years old. He calls me and he tells me he was just diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Wow.
That's pretty
heavy shit.
Yeah, that's heavy. So I was blown away. I mean, we're old friends. I mean, he's like a brother to me. And I deal with a holistic doctor in the Chicago area named Dr. Cass Ingram, who's been on this show many times. In fact, he's on episode 15, I think. You're episode 17, so just a couple episodes ago, you guys. And he was here in the studio in Tampa. And I asked him, I said, what would you do for a 55-year-old guy who's got Alzheimer's? Now, without knowing anything else, Dr. Ingram, who's 63, who has written 20 books, who his first hit book was called The Cure is in the Cupboard. He is a strong advocate of cannabinoids for mental health and for physical health as well. I hate to even separate mental from the physical. The brain is part of the physical body, obviously. It's the most important organ in the body. Without asking anything else, he said, does your friend spend a lot of time in the woods? I said, yeah. I said, he lives in river woods, in the woods. He said, and I said, and he's got a lake house in the North Woods. He said he got bit by a tick. I said, what? He said, he got diagnosed because he had headaches, right? I said, yeah. He said, have him call me. And he told me what he would do the company's called North American Urban Spice. It's incredible. I'm looking at all the products on my counter right now. I'm going to be 60 years old. My testosterone was clearly waning. I said, what do you do, Doc? He said, take this, take this, take this, two times a day, three times a day. I'm back, baby. No synthetic, no synthetic testosterone. And listen,
no injection, no
injections. Oh, I'm injecting, but just not. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Things are working quite nicely, but they weren't. Ladies and gentlemen, there's almost always an answer for you. I could tell you so many stories throughout the decades of utilizing alternative things that, you know, that I'm not saying don't go to a doctor. I'm not saying don't go to a psychiatrist. You do whatever you want to do. Follow your heart. But don't give up. There's always, almost always, a possible solution out there. And in beautiful Colorado, one of them is potentially Connected Roots. Yay.
That's right. Thanks for the plug.
What's your website?
ConnectedRoots.net. Just got redone today, actually, so it should look pretty good.
All right. Well, I'm going to check it out. What's Lauren?
Yeah,
what's
a couple kinks here and there, but feeling pretty snazzy about it.
All right. We'll check it out. Let's do this again if you want.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Did you have fun?
I had a blast.
Me too.
Nothing more exciting than shooting the shit with an old friend, you know?
Not only that, but to talk about such vital issues to the human psyche and the human soul. And I mean,
absolutely.
This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where we drive, you guys. I mean, everybody wants, oh, how you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. Really? Are you really doing fine? You just digging a little bit now. What's going on? People don't want to share their life. One of the hardest things for men to do, especially, is to tell each other they love each other. And I always tell my kids and anybody else, is if you love somebody, tell them, because it might be the last time you ever talk to them. And people are like, don't talk like that. And I was like, is that the truth? Yeah. Well, embrace the truth. It'll move you forward. And if the last conversation you had, you told the person or they told you that you loved them, wouldn't that be a nice thing? They had the last thing that you ever said.
Yeah.
Amen, brother.
Cheers to that. Amen to that.
And so I'll tell my friends or my associates or whoever, you know, I'll, at the end of a conversation, I love you. And they'll go, okay. And I'll say, no, that's where you say, I love you too. Hey, Elliot.
Yes, sir.
I love you.
I love you too, man.
See, guys, gals, not that hard. Elliot Andre, he is the co-founder of Connected Roots with his beautiful wife, Lauren. Continued success, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bro. Peace.
Peace.
There he goes. El Andre. There's Jared Andre, Elliot Andre, Matt Andre, El Andre, Giandre, Miandre. Jared, I heard, just had a son named Dylan Andre, DeAndre. One of the great Camp Menominee families of all time. His dad, Brian, what a great athlete. Whew. A couple years older than I. That was a great family. Still is. Great family for Camp Menominee. I'll never forget when I walked into their house. Beautiful home, downtown Chicago. You have an all-boys camp and you walk into three sons of an alumni, you better knock it out of the park. And we did with the Andre family and so many others that you get to know from time to time here on this quality podcast. Well, we covered a lot of ground today, but we always do. Let me know how I can help. Just go to coachglennkline.com. You can email me at coach@glennklineonline.com. If you have ideas for guests or topics, or if you got criticisms, whatever you want to do, please feel free to share. Check us out on Sex in the Pews. It is not for the faint of heart, but we celebrate healthy human sexuality and expose unhealthy religion. It ain't boring, that's for sure. You can check that out at sexinthepews.com if you dare. And until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.